Up next, one of our old favorite guests, Robert Morningstar, back with us, and we're going to be talking about UFO sightings, what's going on the moon, and some other exciting things, and later on we'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We've got several pictures on our website in the highlight reel that Robert Morningstar has supplied to us, so those of you who are at your computer or have your smartphone, you might want to follow along as we talk about some of these objects. Robert Morningstar, of course, is a civilian intelligence analyst, psychotherapist in New York City. He's also an FAA licensed pilot and instrument ground instructor. Robert has studied the paranormal and UFOs for more than 40 years. He has written extensively to expose NASA's use of disinformation technology in suppressing evidence of extraterrestrial life and exposing the real nature and threat of the UFO phenomenon. And he is also the associate editor of UFO Digest. Welcome back, Robert. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, George. It's great to be back.
Good to have you. My 18-year-old granddaughter just got her FAA license, and she's all excited about it.
Congratulations. It's one of the greatest things you can have anywhere, but as an American, the privilege of flying and the accessibility of it, if you have a chance to fly in your lifetime, go right ahead.
18 years old. She found this as a passion and just never looked back?
Oh, you know, it's a bug that catches you young, I think. I know Flash Gordon made me want to fly from the age of 7 or 8, you know. It's in our nature.
I love it. So I haven't talked to you in 3 years.
I know.
It's way too long. What in the world have you been up to?
Well, it's been a tough 3 years, you know. We had a really tough time with UFO Digest, which I'm happy to say we've just revamped and moved to the United States.
Uh-huh.
We were doing so much good work that we were really getting hacked, you know, every couple of weeks, every couple of months. And the servers were up in Canada, as you know. Dirk van der Ploeg, the founder of it, passed away around that time. And the server people didn't really give a hoot about antivirus and protecting us and our website, and so we were knocked off. I came out with the Robert Kennedy expose on the 50th anniversary of Robert Kennedy's death. We exposed the real killer, and wouldn't you know it, the next day, whacked. And several other controversial things that we were publishing. But we're back online, folks. Please go to UFO Digest. Thanks to Daniel Benjamin, our webmaster, who's handling it. And I'm very happy to say that the headline article is about one of the greatest UFO experiences of my life. And the article itself is about the last 7 years, specifically here in New York, where I've had 7 UFO close encounters. Folks, in New York City, all you have to do is lift your head.
And there's something.
Everybody's looking at the ground going down the subway, looking at the first floor. Folks, look up. They're all over the place.
Yeah, what's going on over New York City? Why?
Well, it's the center of the world. It's the site of the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but let me tell you, UFO activity around New York never stops. I have a friend named Jeff who has captured the most amazing UFO flybys, and he's got a knack for it. There are certain people who have a sixth sense for it. Jeff is one of them. My friend Tom Waters is in Virginia. I hope he's listening. These people have a sixth sense, and I remarked on it to Tom. I said, Tom, how do you do this? He's been sending me pictures for 7 years, you know. He just goes out on his porch, starts shooting the sky. Of course he lives near Langley, Virginia.
Uh-huh.
Hint, hint. Anyway, he's got amazing UFO photographs, and I finally said to him, hey, Tom, you really have a psychic sense for this. And he said to me, Robert, I know you'll think I'm crazy, but I can smell them. And I said, what? He said, I can actually smell them. I come out on my porch, and the air feels sparkling. It feels fresh. And when I smell that smell, I just grab my camera.
And he knows.
I don't even see them. I start shooting the sky. And he gets UFOs hidden in clouds. He gets UFOs in formation. And I said to him, oh, that's easy to explain. that scent, that smell of fresh air, ozone.
It's
UFOs
part of their propulsion.
Ionize the air.
That's right.
Yeah, the field ionizes the air. It's such an powerful electrical field that it ionizes the air, and certain people are sensitive enough to smell it. So Tom is one of them. And my friend, Captain Robert Collins, who wrote Exempt from Disclosure, he just moved from Ohio. He was near Wright-Patterson for years. I mean, his whole career, practically. He was in the Foreign Technology Division of the U.S. Air Force. He just moved out to Las Vegas, and he keeps shooting and sending pictures.
What do you think of this march on Area 51? I keep telling people not to go.
I think it's kind of crazy. I've invaded a U.S. Army base, and it's not fun.
It's not fun. And they don't fool around either.
No, you don't fool around. Listen, folks, it's a very serious matter, and the military have their orders. You go up to the fence, and it says, U.S. government property, no trespassing, lethal force authorized. And when they say that, they're not kidding around. So I think it's a ludicrous idea. Not only that, but they're going to overwhelm the town, or are overwhelming the town.
Yes.
There's no hotel. There's not enough hotel rooms, not enough food, not enough restaurants. The little old alien inn can't handle it all.
Not enough bathrooms, for crying out loud.
Of course.
You know what?
So I don't think it's a good idea, and I advise people not to get caught.
Hey, we've got a lot of pictures that you sent Lex today that we posted on the website.
Yes, I did. I'm very happy to share these with you. The first thing I want to say right off the top is I'm very happy in this era, the new space, the Space Force, and the new NASA. I have an old name, the old NASA or Paleo NASA, or new NASA, Neo NASA.
Is there a new NASA?
There's a new NASA.
Are they changing?
Yes, sir. And we have a great director. I say we now because I consider myself part of the family. You know, the way we felt we were part of the family of Apollo, everybody was engaged.
Yep, we couldn't wait.
Everyone. Well, Jim Bridenstine is doing a fantastic job. He is the new director who was appointed by President Trump. And I visit the NASA channel regularly. Sometimes I spend 20 minutes looking out the window from the space station. You know, they have this wonderful camera.
Yeah.
On the
ISS. Some strange things have buzzed by that.
I've captured some of them on video.
You sure have.
I was listening to our friend John B. Wells once interviewing a Secret Service agent while watching this, and the UFOs are passing under the space station. So I grabbed my camera and shot it off the screen. But 2 weeks ago, I saw the crew, the prospective crew, trainees for the Mars mission, three men, one of them an African-American. And I've got some great news for the distaff side. When we go back to the moon, a woman is going to be aboard.
That's fantastic.
Yes, and Mr. Bridenstine, I really enjoy listening. He's so excited. He's so affable. You know,
he seems honest, too.
Remember Don Golden?
Golden? Yep.
You know, that curmudgeon? Anyway, it's a really different situation. And I'm very excited tonight to present to you and Coast to Coast. For years and years and years, I've said that NASA uses disinformation technology to hide the facts. And one of the things that I've accused them of doing is filling in the mores. In the black and white photos that they released over the years, the mores, like Mare Tranquillitatis, I'll speak in English, the Sea of Tranquility, the Sea of Serenity, and the Mare Crisium, or the Sea of Crisis.
And we landed, the first moon landing was in the Tranquility, right?
Yes, it was in Tranquility.
Yeah.
But the photos, they make them look all flat black, like flat-top parking lots.
Yeah.
But I used to take those black and white pictures and try to enhance them, and I succeeded. And then I'd start to see lines and curves and hollows, and I said, look, they are not telling us the truth even about the surface of the mares. And I said, you know what it looks like to me? Like they made a model and they filled in all the mares with plaster and painted it black. And then last year, last June, As you know, I rummage and rampage across the internet looking for everything of interest.
And you don't miss much.
Well, I thank God that he gave me these eyes, because the eyes I have made it possible for me to share all of these wonderful discoveries and some terrible discoveries that I've made. For example, the JFK assassination cover-up. You know, that was a terrible but wonderful discovery, because it shattered the illusions that they had imposed on us. I say the American people who believe that Oswald shot the president and believe the Zapruder film was real were no better off than a bunch of munchkins in Oz. And that's exactly how they were treating us. So I said that they were applying disinformation technology to the photographs, which has led a lot of people to say that we didn't go to the moon, we didn't land on the moon, that everything is doctored. The photos are doctored. And I say, yes, the photos are doctored, but not because we didn't go to the moon, but because they want to hide what's really there. And one of the things that Paleo NASA was hiding for years was the true colors of the moon.
Why hide the colors, Robert?
Well, because if people saw how beautiful the moon really is, people would want to go there. But if you portray it as a dead, gray,
dull,
hostile world, who the hell wants to go there? Not me. But, folks, take a look at the pictures that George is presenting tonight, and you're going to see the most beautiful photograph of a little more than a half moon. And I've provided two copies or two views of the old moon, because now we have a new moon, right? When they're giving us the real stuff, you know, this is the new moon. The old moon was that dead old world, colorless, lifeless, dead inside and out. But look at that picture. Those are the true colors of the moon. And one of the things I see, the highlands are really, really bright. The lowlands, the mares, especially the Mare Crisium and the Mare Tranquillitatis, where we landed, the Sea of Tranquility, you can see the contours of the Lurain, L-U-R-A-I-N. That corresponds to terrain on Earth. Since we're on terra firma, we call it terrain. When you're on Luna, you call it Lurain. And it's incredible. There are vast warrens of caves and hollows and canyons, highlands, plateaus. There's one place up there, just near the Mare Crisium, where you can see it. It's toward the top of the photo. It's a very bright, sandy or golden-colored area that's a plateau. And if we were to walk up to the edge of it, we would see a precipice miles and miles and miles deep into this dark region, the Sea of Tranquility. Now, I know from having known Edgar Mitchell and having presented him with pictures of UFOs that he took on the moon, and he didn't even know he'd taken them, he'd forgotten, I know that the astronauts were tasked to look for entrances into the interior of the moon. And this is one of the reasons, I believe, that they flat-top, black-top, and parking-lotted the Mares, because they don't want you to see the incredible variety of Lurain and formations. And there is a region, as I like to say it, right around the corner, an area of the moon that we can't really see. It's kind of flattened out to us. Let's call it on the right side of the moon. When you see the man on the moon, you look up at it.
Right.
I say the right side. If you went around the corner, right, around the limb, you'd come across two Mares, the Mare Marginis and the Mare Smithy. And in that region, I have found that is where I believe the entrances to the moon actually lie.
Wow.
And that's one of those regions that I've studied for more than a decade. And the photographs, gradually, I started to enhance them, and I started to see these areas are not flat, black-top parking lots.
Will this new NASA director be a little more open with these, in your opinion?
Well, I think the fact that you're seeing that color photograph is proof positive that there's a new openness in NASA. And they are releasing new... Well, they're old pictures, but they're releasing higher-resolution photographs. The archives are being reviewed, And old fuzzy pictures are being replaced with sharper
with
ones.
The good stuff, yeah.
That are not cropped. But what I want to say about this, the shock that I had when I found this photograph was that I found it in a Polish astronomy magazine. And when I went to downloaded it, I was shocked by the title of the file name. You know, I've sent you a lot of photographs over the years, and I always mark my work. Right? Mm-hmm. When I take a photograph and I improve it, enhance it, sharpen it, make something more visible, to me that's a work of art, and I sign my work. So I usually write M-Star ENH or Morningstar Enhancement. So I download this picture, and I bring it up, and I look at the name of the file, and it says United States Trump Enhancement.jpg. I almost fell off my chair. I said, so this he put his name on this one, and
he got it released, huh?
He got it released, and he got a lot of other things released, like 30,000 JFK files.
What's your take? I want to talk with you about JFK on another night, Robert, because
sure.
That's important. Maybe as we get close to the December anniversary. But what is your take of this UFO release lately of the Navy aircraft jets chasing the tic-tac-type objects and stuff? This is amazing.
It's wonderful. It's amazing. When you read that article, UFO Digest editor reports UFOs over New York City, you're going to read the account of my involvement with the U.S. Navy. Well, it's been a lifelong involvement, but in 2008, I was recruited, along with two other New Yorkers here, to be the vanguard of a push for disclosure in the United Nations. And the reason it happened in 2008-2009 is that for the first time in history, three Navy admirals assumed the top three military positions in the U.S. government. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff was Admiral Mike Mullen. The director of National Intelligence was Mike McDonald. And the commander-in-chief of the Central Command was Admiral Fallon. So with these three Navy men in position, they decided that this was the time when they could make a push for disclosure, because it's been an ongoing war between the U.S. Army, U.S. Air Force, which I say in one breath because that's what they were. In World War II, it was called USAAF, U.S. Army Air Forces. But when they got split up in 1947, the mentality, the attitude, the modus operandi didn't change. And the Navy has been trying to tell the people the truth about UFOs since the Battle of L.A. and Roswell and later. Admiral Sidney Soares, who was head of the CIA, and Admiral Hillenkoetter, Hillenkoetter was the man who revealed that the Air Force considered UFOs serious business.
Which is an amazing story.
It's an amazing story and a statement that he made February 25th, 1961. Anyway, the Navy has been pushing for disclosure. Maybe you remember Major Keogh, Gordon
Donald
Moore,
Keogh, sure.
NICAP. Yeah. Well, it's always been a headbutting contest. Well, 2008-2009, the Navy had the opportunity for 10 months these men were going to have the triumvirate. Right. At the end of 10 months, one of them was going to be changed. So they asked me and a couple of others to help spur this disclosure, not through the United States government, because they knew the roadblocks were so great.
Right.
They were hoping we could get a push through the United Nations. So United Nations meetings were arranged, discussions were had, and it was going along, and something was moving, let's say. But what really moved was the publicity. UFO Digest was intimately involved with several other reliable UFO researchers.
Hold on for a second, Robert. At the break, we'll come back and talk more calls with Mr. Morningstar next hour on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Robert Morningstar with us. We will take calls with Robert next hour as we talk about his work and his website, UFODigest.com, linked up there at CoastToCoastAM.com. We're talking about some UFO cases, what's going on in the moon. And the moon fascinates you, Robert. How come?
I'm a lunatic.
Far from that.
Well, it's funny how, well, first of all, it's the most beautiful thing in the night sky.
It is.
And
I'll give you
we
that.
Wouldn't be here without the moon. Mankind would never have evolved without the moon. Think about it. We would not have a 24, we would have a day. We could split it into different ways. We wouldn't have a month, right? We'd have a year and a mm-hmm. day. And we would not have the cycle, the 13-month lunar cycle, which is intimately related to human biology. Just think of menstruation, female, women's menstruation, and you know, the animal world. It's synced up to the moon, to the lunar cycle.
And when there's a full moon, I've talked to some emergency medical technicians and emergency operators. They say people act weird during full moons.
Of course.
They can judge it.
Yeah, we are made, 90% of us is water.
Water, that's right.
And the waters of the oceans are lifted by the moon. In the Bay of Fundy up in Canada, the tide is lifted 40, 45 feet.
It's like a magnet.
Exactly. And then we have all of this, if you understand Chinese alchemy, the qi means steam, you know, the life force.
Mm-hmm.
It means steam, literally. It's a living vapor. It's humid. It's watery. And the moon and the sun and actually the planet, the larger planets themselves have an effect on all of us. I do believe to some extent in astrology. And enough said, you know, we human beings would never have evolved as we have if the moon had not been there to guide our way through the night.
Well, and to keep things stable on the planet.
I guess, again, Flash Gordon. Where did Flash Gordon go in the first serials? He went to the moon. And, you know, let me just say something.
Jules Verne's in
oh, yes, in, from the Earth to the Moon.
Yeah.
And interesting, Jules Verne predicted that the launch point would be Florida. Because he was
He was right about that too.
Yeah, he figured out that it would be easier to get into orbit the closer you were to the equator, because you'd get a 1,000-mile boost. I don't know how he knew that, you know, in the 1880s.
Well, look at the Leonardo da Vinci and the things that he knew about the. I mean, he invented submarines, basically, didn't he?
Right, and tanks.
Yep.
And a helicopter based on a spiral airfoil. But I wanted to get back to the United Nations and finish that up.
Something happened there because I don't remember anything major coming from them.
Well, the publicity. What we were able to do is generate enough attention, interest, and publicity. And I approached the major news companies, specifically Fox and CNN, and said, listen, guys, you have to understand something. People want to know about UFOs, and you're going to make a lot of money. You're going to make a lot of money covering UFOs. And once I brought that in, somebody got the idea.
Bingo.
And they started to cover it. And I have to tip my hat to Tucker Carlson and Fox News. They are covering UFOs very seriously. Nick Pope has been on Tucker Carlson's show about 6 or 7 times. Jesse Waters interviewed Calvin Parker.
Mm-hmm. They're taking this seriously.
Fox News is taking it very seriously, but back then, the person who started to take it seriously was Larry King, especially after the Stevensville UFO incident, where those UFOs appeared over Stevensville, did maneuvers going vertical, and then just shot off.
I was on a couple Larry King shows where he was interviewing Stanton Friedman, the late Stanton Friedman, Buzz Aldrin about UFOs and everything else. You're right, he was into it.
He got into it big time. And you know, the turning point came when he always used to have the skeptic, right? The rebuttal. He'd have Bill Nye or Michael Shermer, and they'd always butt in with their ridiculous comments and attempts to ridicule. And then one day, it was regarding Stevensville, and Michael Shermer tried to butt in. And Larry King, said, shut up, Michael. that was the turning point for me. He said, shut up, Michael, let the man speak. So It did change, but I have to say, December 16th, 2017, was a Navy victory day. 55 years of effort, an effort that had been initiated by President Kennedy. And I believe that he was assassinated in large part because of the initiative that he directed on November 12, 1963, after conversing through the hotline with Nikita Khrushchev on the subject of UFOs, mm-hmm. the need to cooperate, the need to share information, and the need to avoid nuclear war due to UFO activities, because, quite frankly,
of an accidental war.
UFOs seem to be playing chicken with both countries, trying to get us to trigger a war. UFOs would come over the North Pole racing, multiple UFOs, racing over Canada, crossing the Dew Line, the Bemuse Line, and we
thought there were missiles.
NORAD thought there was a nuclear attack from Russia.
Yeah.
And we'd go into DEFCON 1 and DEFCON 2, DEFCON 1, and ready to launch, and then they just stopped dead in their tracks and zip vertically straight up.
Went the other way.
Back into space. No, not the other way, just into space. You know, like an L shape. Line over Canada, vertical into space. And so they came to call them fast walkers. We also have the incidents at Minot Air Force Base in South Dakota. The fact is, UFOs in 1966 approached the base, went over Minuteman missile bases and batteries. They disabled 10 missiles. And when the missiles were tested to be repair the circuitry, Boeing found that the targets had been changed. And I've always wanted to know, what did they change the targets to? Did they send them into outer space or land them in the ocean? Or did they just say Washington, D.C.? But the message was clear. If you try to launch a nuclear missile, a first strike on the Soviet Union or anyone else, don't be surprised if your missile comes down on Washington, D.C., or Langley, or Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. They had that power, and they made it obvious.
Is that happening today?
I don't think it's necessary. I do know this. All nuclear submarines capable of launching missiles, whether they are American, Soviet, or other, they are all being tracked by UFOs. Wherever that submarine goes, it's got a guardian angel or a guardian devil watching it. And this was revealed by the remote viewer.
Which one? Ed Dames?
No.
Russell Targ?
No.
Ingo Swann.
Okay. His name escapes. His face was right in my mind's eye. Yes, Ingo Swann. And also, Ralph Blum wrote a book called Out There back in the 1990s. And the first chapter dealt with remote viewers. And they set a remote viewer to track. They wanted to see if he could track an atomic submarine. And he went into his trance, and he was tracking the submarine. And all of a sudden, he went into panic. And they had to pull him back. And the reason he went into panic is that he saw a UFO tracking this submarine. And UFOs have an amazing psychic ability or aura around them. They can affect people in many, many ways.
Sure.
They can affect your emotions. They can affect your memory. They can boost your intellect, or they can dumb you down so you don't remember a damn thing for 20 years. And that's something that happened to me.
Yeah, well, you had an encounter, didn't you?
I have had many encounters, but I was not free to speak about them in the past. I was.
Why not?
Yeah, well, because I had taken certain
oaths.
Well, one of the reasons was to protect myself, right?
Yeah.
From ridicule, debunking, stalking, whatever.
Or whatever. Yeah.
And also, I took oaths of secrecy and loyalty to the United States government, the United States Navy. I was involved since 1969 in U.S. Navy experiments in the development of artificial intelligence. My brain was a model for artificial intelligence. I was a research fellow at Fordham University in the psychology department, an experiment that was funded by IBM and the U.S. ONI, Office of Naval Intelligence, under a professor named Professor John F. Walsh, who was a former Marine. He was working with John Lilly in communicating with dolphins. And the reason John Lilly wanted to communicate with dolphins was to find a model for interspecies communication, because the dolphin is the closest thing that we could find on Earth to an extraterrestrial.
Well, and it's also very intelligent.
Extreme, far more intelligent than we are.
I think they have better reasoning power, that's for sure. They only had arms and thumbs, right?
Yeah, well, they don't need them. They have the ocean, and God only knows what they've been able to do. You want to hear something very interesting that was told to me?
Sure.
By a chief in the U.S. Coast Guard. He told me...
A Navy chief.
He was a Coast Guard.
Coast Guard chief. But who don't know what the military means, we're not talking about a Native American.
No. So he told me that the Navy has had this ongoing program to develop remote viewers and develop psychics, and that one of the ways that they develop this psychism is to put them into a swimming pool with a group of dolphins.
Wow, that's amazing.
And that the dolphins' energy, their vibrations, are transferred through the water and stimulate the remote viewer candidate to go into trance and to be able to do remote viewing. But back to the United Nations. As a result of that, we found out that the Vatican was very involved in preparing the world for UFO disclosure. And ultimately, I got to meet the two highest-ranking people in the United Nations regarding UFOs. I met the chairman of the UN Committee for the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space, Mr. Dimitri Propriatu. He is a Romanian cosmonaut who orbited the Earth. And I also met the ambassador for outer space affairs, Maslan Othman.
We have an ambassador for that? At the United Nations?
Yes. She was appointed back then in 2010.
Huh.
I told you, this thing spurred so much activity and so much public outcry for the truth that the United Nations actually appointed an ambassador for outer space affairs, and her name is Maslan Othman, and I got to meet her in 2013 when she was awarded the Leonov Medal, which is the highest-ranking award for achievements in outer space.
Is she still in that office?
I believe she is. I haven't heard anyone replacing her. But the interesting thing, George, is take the letter of her first name and her last name and combine them. Her name is Maslan Othman.
M-A. M-A?
Maslan Othman.
M-O.
M-O-T-H-M-A-N.
Mothman. Interesting. You do find these strange things, don't you, Robert?
I have eyes, and I have a brain, and I look at it, and I said, man, isn't this a coincidence? They appointed an ambassador her first initial is M, and her last name is Othman, O-T-H-M-A-N. The word is Mothman. Not really, it's just a fact, but it's an interesting coincidence. So anyway, I asked at this press conference, I asked Mr. Propriatu, the chairman of the Committee for Peaceful Uses of Outer Space, whether the United Nations had protocols for the contingencies of encountering life in outer space. He loved the question. I saw him. He smiled. He took a deep breath, and he said, well, the United Nations has many protocols ready for the contingencies of encountering life in outer space, whether it's intelligent life or microbial life. The United Nations, and then out of the corner of my eye, I saw these shoulders go up, and they went down like, humph, and somebody interrupted, and it was Ambassador Othman.
Like,
and
she said, he said something wrong?
Let me say something right here. Let me make something perfectly clear. Nothing is going to happen on the floor of the United Nations General Assembly regarding UFOs unless it is sponsored by one of three organizations: the International Association of Aeronautics, the International Association of Astronautics or the International International Association of Science.
Why did they need one of those endorsements?
That's the policy. If one of these scientific organizations did not imprint, give them the imprimatur, the okay, and say there's something here, you could talk to turn blue in the General Assembly. Ambassadors could discuss it ad infinitum, but it was
nothing
never
will happen.
Going to come to the floor for a vote on anything. Also, I found out that every organization has a different euphemism for UFOs. So if you write to the United Nations about UFOs, they say, we have no information on anything about UFOs, because they don't call them that. They call them UHFOs. UHFOs, ultra high frequency objects.
What's the difference, really?
Well, it's a really more difficult to say UHFO, right? It's no difference at all. It's just a euphemism. It's a code word. So that when you write to the United Nations and say, I would like, under freedom of information, any information you have on UFOs, they'll say, oh, we don't have anything on UFOs, because all their files are UHFOs.
And in theory, they're telling the truth, technically.
They're telling the truth at the same time. So ultimately, in 2017, President Trump and the U.S. Navy got together, and they did the disclosure. And as I like to say, after all your work on Coast to Coast and all your years on ancient aliens, what was the national reaction? One big yawn.
Yep. That's changing.
It's changed, but I'd like to say this. I was thrilled to hear Commander Fravor.
Hold on for a second, Robert. Again, at the top of the hour now, we've got one more hour to go. We're going to come back. We'll talk more about that. I want to get your take on the Chinese and what they're doing here with space, and then we'll take calls.